Energy Transition, episode number 60. 60. Our topic today is what role for nuclear in the energy transition. Good morning, Irene Slav, Tammy Nimitz, David Blackmon, and our audience.
Good morning.
Afternoon.
Hello.
Please let me share some charts that.
That's a lot of charts.
Yeah. Six charts. Yeah. The first one is important to say that U.S. No, it's not the U.S. It's the energy source for the electricity in Europe. France is 67% of the electricity come from nuclear. And Germany today is zero.
Well done, Germany.
The U.S. is the largest number of nuclear has power plants in the world. It's impressive, the number, 92. This picture is important to show for 2040 the amount of oil the energy mix compared to nuclear. Nuclear is still small, still little. This is a very interesting chart. It's the uranium production, and see that the countries that has uranium production are not the countries that consumes uranium. Nuclear produce four times less carbon pollution than solar. Impressive.
Awkward.
Very awkward, yes.
And the last one is solar emits 40 times more radiation per unit than nuclear, comparing because the rare earth metals.
Even wind produces more.
Yeah. David, please. David, why did Germany government choose to close, shut down all nuclear plants, the three last ones, in front of this energy crisis?
Well, it all boils down to one word, Fukushima. The government in Germany, in the wake of the Fukushima disaster in, 2011?
Yeah.
Panicked, made a rash decision that it was going to eliminate. What was at the time? What was it? 15 or 17 high capacity nuclear power plants in Germany that was generating over 30% of their electricity. Fukushima happened. A lot of people died from an earthquake and a tidal wave. No one died from radiation or a nuclear meltdown, which didn't happen. It was a disaster for sure for the Fukushima power plant, but no one died as a result of that plant. People died because of the earthquake, a category, 9 earthquake, one of the most powerful in recent decades, and the tidal wave that resulted killed more than anything else. It was a horrible thing. But to react to that by panicking and saying, oh, we must get rid of all of our nuclear plants, it's just a completely irrational act by the government in Germany, and no one can really make a decent argument otherwise. And to think that over the course of 12 years, the government there, government officials there through, we're on the third different chancellor there now, since that time, would continue to follow through on that policy and ultimately completely eliminate a zero carbon emission energy source once the plant's built, at a time when all these Western governments are so focused on moving this energy transition to low carbon energy sources forward, is really has to rank as one of the most irrational energy policy actions ever taken by any government on Earth. It's just inexplicable that this could happen, and yet here we are. They've eliminated the final three here. last month. And what are they replacing it with? They're replacing it with a large increase, reactivation of dormant coal plants, and a big increase in coal mining and production and burning of coal. That's what they're replacing it with. It's just absurd.
Interesting, yeah. Luca gave us a very good question.
Exactly.
Tsunami risks in Bavaria.
Tsunami risks in Bavaria. Thank you, Luca. That's brilliant. I may steal that in a future story.
Yeah. And Tammy, what do you think about Germany closing and shutting down all of nuclear plants?
Tammy, that's for you. Uh-oh, have we lost Tammy?
Yeah, Tammy is not.
I don't think Tammy can hear us.
Yeah. Tammy. Hi.
Tammy.
I'm back. I don't know what was happening there. Sorry.
No problem. And your opinion about Germany closing all three nuclear plants remaining? Yeah, she's not hearing us.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Germans have a very unusual relationship with nuclear because they were really big on it from the 50s onward. West Germany was. They were part of the Uratom original group. They really wanted to be sort of the engineering center for nuclear in Europe. And they were kind of going down that road for a while. France, of course, went full nuclear, especially in the 70s, because they, with the energy crisis and whatnot, they wanted to ensure that they had their own form of energy. And then with the Germans, when the SPD came into power, this was in the late 90s, they decided they were going to switch to natural gas. And there was a lot of talk about phasing out nuclear. And then when the CPD got in power with Merkel, she promised to not shut down the nuclear power plants. So there's this ebb and flow of support and fear of nuclear in Germany. And I think the original sort of fear about it was Chernobyl. And it was in their backyard, and there was so much angst in Europe about, oh my gosh, what are we doing? We better shut down nuclear and so on, or reconsider it. And that's kind of where Gerhard Schroeder got his position from. And the Greens were going crazy. We need to shut them down and so on. And so it was very interesting to see Merkel, who promised she wouldn't do it, ended up doing it because of Fukushima. So the green movement in Germany is very, they're small, but they have a lot of power. And when they pushed in this direction, I think there was hope in other quarters that they would lose their sting and lose some influence because of what was going on with Ukraine and Russia. But all it, you know, it just delayed it a little bit. So what happens now for Germany, when now apparently they're going to go natural gas, sort of, with LNG, but not pipelines. And then they're reopening coal mines and coal plants, but they're supposed to double down and build more wind and solar. So solar in Germany, which makes no sense, but you know,
but
there Irina it may, is, right? I mean,
yeah. Irina may be fear for the proximity of nuclear plant technologies and military use of nuclear energy?
No, I don't think the two are connected, but apparently they're really scared of nuclear energy. I remember a reader sent me scanned copies of a children's book, a German children's book from the 80s. I think it dates back that far back. And this children's book was about how bad nuclear energy is for the environment, how nuclear waste kills, you know, animals, kills fish, and it's very, very bad. And this, you know, answered my question, what is wrong with Germans and nuclear? And I was rolling my eyes a while back while Tammy was talking about Europe's scare from Chernobyl. I'm in Bulgaria. My husband's from Romania. We were right below Ukraine. So, okay, people in Romania took iodine tablets. I drank iodine right after Chernobyl happened. We did not start, you know, being scared of nuclear. Romania has reactors. We have reactors. We closed 4 of our 6 perfectly well-working reactors to get into the European Union.
Yeah.
And now we're exporting electricity thanks to our still open nuclear reactors. We had zero problem with nuclear energy, and we were much closer to Chernobyl than Germany ever will be.
Yeah.
So it's really a very, very deep indoctrination, the very, I don't know, long-term manipulation, scaremongering. And they are now incapable of seeing nuclear as anything else but dangerous. Fukushima didn't help, definitely. I think it gave them the last push in that direction.
But current polls show that the Germans support keeping nuclear open. And yeah, the government went, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, actually. Even Germans are not on board. Well, many are, but not most. Definitely,
right.
It's a minority that's on board with that. Maybe
what was
the government doesn't care what people think.
The Italian government essentially did the same thing as Germany only years earlier. Thank you, SRB. Yes, that's true.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah, Chernobyl scared a lot of people, and rightly so. Chernobyl was a terrible
understandably
disaster.
Yes, yeah. But
again, there's ways to, I mean, Chernobyl was you know, when you look at the technology that was used and the standards that were used in constructing and operating that plant, the HBO series on Chernobyl actually did a decent job of revealing the facts behind all that. You know, it just doesn't, the current technology and standards for nuclear in the Western world are just light years ahead of that. And you know, yes, I mean, obviously nuclear waste can kill fish and animals if you just take it and toss it out into the woods, right? Obviously, it's going to kill everybody if you do that, but that's not what happens with it. And it's the fright campaign that has essentially, I mean, really decimated the nuclear power industry in the Western world is just one of the most despicable examples of disinformation and propaganda that anyone has ever achieved. And unfortunately, the industry itself has been fairly powerless in fighting back against it.
Look again, seriously.
Nuclear was sacrificed for political expediency, as Schroeder had already started to wind down nuclear, yes, and Merkel reversed it. Schroeder was on the Gazprom board as a reminder. Oh, well, yes. Funny how those things work, isn't it?
I was waiting for someone to mention that. Because that was an ongoing joke when we lived in Germany. It's like, oh, why are we so dependent on Russian gas? Ask Gerhard Schroeder.
Yeah, follow the money.
Gazprom.
That's right.
The Italian, oh, well,
yeah.
Oh no! Chernobyl
was a convenient excuse. The reactor was a graphite moderated type, which had nothing to do with the PWR used in the West. Yes, true. Yeah.
The French didn't get Chernobyl.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, what was France 67% of their electricity mix? Has there ever been a nuclear disaster in France? Sweden was at 40%. Has there ever been a nuclear disaster in Sweden? There's never been one in the United States, despite the hype about Three Mile Island. Three Mile Island produced almost no radioactive emissions, almost none, and was quickly contained. And what really amplified the Three Mile Island event was that the movie starring Jane Fonda was released about a week before that incident happened. And the movie was a complete flop until Three Mile Island happened. And the next week, that movie, what was it called? The China Syndrome?
Yeah.
That movie was the highest grossing movie on Earth the next week after Three Mile Island happened. It was just
that
coincidence of events that really amplified the whole thing and turned it into a death knell for the U.S. industry's growth.
Yeah.
after that. And that's 40 years ago, 43 years ago.
So, David, you mean that the risks for nuclear plants are low, are not important?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obvious. What we've had, three real events in Three Mile Island, wasn't even a real event. You've really had two real potential disasters, one at Chernobyl that was a nuclear-centered disaster, no question about it. The one at Fukushima was caused by a massive earthquake and a tidal wave. In all this time, when did we start building nuclear power plants? In the 50s, I think. It's the fear factor of all this is truly extraordinary. And it's all the result of propaganda and, you know, indoctrination in our schools and the inability of a demonized industry to fight back against it.
Well, you know, if I could just point out, one of the slides Armando had was from Environmental Progress, which is Michael Schellenberger's site. And their section on nuclear is excellent for just outlining all of the different issues that we're kind of talking about with respect to nuclear and why it is a good solution if you're serious about decarbonization and the net zero, whatever, to have reliable energy. If that's what countries want, then nuclear should be the way they're going. And the fact that there is a little bit of movement on it, but not as much as you would anticipate, sort of says something about some of the people thinking about net zero transition. And I would like to just bring in Poland for an example. Poland hasn't had that much nuclear, I don't think, but now they're committing to build between 6 and 9 fairly large nuclear power generating stations. They signed an agreement with, I think it was Westinghouse, back in November. They're also going down the route of small modular reactors. So they're building 6 big ones. And then there's talk, the Orlen, which is the, I think it's the state electrical generator in Poland, was talking about 79 small modular reactors. And they're going to be building apparently the GE Hitachi small one. And it's the same one that the TVA in the US are doing, and in Canada and the UK and a few other countries. So Poland will be exporting energy to Germany probably because Germany won't. And they'll be buying nuclear, but they won't build their own.
But Tammy, you mean that the smaller nuclear plants can be, let's see, less risk at the same time?
I think so. I haven't studied enough the design for this particular modular reactor that they're discussing, but my understanding is that it is very safe, especially compared to the larger ones. Doesn't require as much fissionable material and so on. So it has the potential to be a real game changer if they work out the way they're said to work out.
Luca is commenting again here. The French
shut down. The French shut down Super Phoenix as a political promise by the socialists. I don't know who Jospin is, who won the elections Alain and Jospin. Shut that reactor in the early 90s. Oh, okay.
The politician.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark Nelson once had a great thread on Twitter, and he did interviews about it, how France did try to, you know, to destroy its nuclear industry. It couldn't.
Right. It's too valuable.
But it did try, in order to push other low-carbon energy sources for some reason. I have no idea why.
But isn't that what this all comes down to? The people who are behind the energy transition and the narrative behind that and all the promotion of it have chosen, they've chosen three industries, wind, solar, and electric vehicles, wind and solar and power generation, to benefit from all of these subsidies and anything, any alternate source that threatens the ability for those two rent-seeking industries to grab all those subsidies from all these Western governments ends up being demonized. And nuclear is the centerpiece of that strategy. When you talk about these modular reactors, each one of them, we talk about how small they are, And basically the basic size of them is 500 megawatts of capacity. That's a lot. for a small installation with a tiny land footprint, and yeah. you can site them right there in the demand centers. You don't have to build thousands of miles of new transmission lines because they don't depend on the weather. You know, they generate 24/7. It's such an obvious no-brainer solution to this zero carbon obsession that we have going on, that the only real explanation for what's happening in the policy environment is follow the money. And the money's all behind wind and solar. And that's what these politicians are going to push because that's who's funding their election campaigns. And, you know, I mean, bluntly put, that's the reality behind all of this, I think. That's my opinion anyway.
To be fair, the European Union hasn't been that vocal about nuclear. It hasn't right. been demonizing nuclear because they are perfectly aware that they cannot do the transition without nuclear. They're just not talking about it because right. it's not wind and solar. Yeah. And I don't think if there are any ETFs, low carbon ESG ETFs dedicated to nuclear, which is a shame if you think about it, because they are very low carbon. But this is not just the trendy stuff. You know, it's wind and solar.
And which is why, Irina, the taxonomy is so important because it allows for the different financing and so on. So when they said that nuclear would qualify as clean, and now you've got, along with natural gas or whatever, then you've got the activist group suing the EU for including both natural gas and nuclear as clean. And I say, well, how can nuclear not be? It's not like if it's about carbon emissions, how can nuclear not be classified
right.
as clean?
Yeah, interesting. Andrei Luis Jakubovic.
Small modular reactors are their worst nightmare. Yes, thank you, Andrei
yeah,
Luis.
Like carbon capture. Yeah.
That's yep. right.
Yeah, yeah.
Besides Europe, other countries have let's say, limitations for nuclear. Brazil is the opposite. Brazil has two just ready nuclear plants. And it's going to the third one, Angra 3. But why some countries like and some countries hate nuclear, Irina?
Well, I think Germany was a good example. Just very, very long time of indoctrination. I don't know if any countries hate nuclear. I think Spain has a problem with nuclear, if I'm not mistaken. But it's really betting on solar. So that could be it. I mean, if they build nuclear capacity, that will compromise their solar power targets, I imagine. But I don't think a lot of countries hate it. Actually, it was funny, actually, in Asia, Japan is thinking about restarting its reactors. South Korea is thinking about going back to nuclear. And that's freeing up LNG for Europe. As the recent Reuters report, yeah. Europe has a chance for this winter because Asian countries with nuclear capacity are thinking about boosting it or restarting it in the case of Japan. So even Japan, think about it, even Japan that went through Fukushima, this huge tragedy, and of course this tragedy unleashed a very strong anti-nuclear sentiment among the Japanese, now it is rethinking its strategy of no nuclear or minimum nuclear because it needs energy.
Right.
And yeah.
Again, reality is reasserting itself very bluntly. They need energy. They need it to be reliable. They need it now. So they are doing nuclear. Same with South Korea. LNG prices are becoming too high. What do they diversify into? They're locally produced nuclear power, which happens to be also, this cannot be stressed enough, it happens to be low carbon, very low carbon.
Very good, Irina, very good. There is no transition without energy security with the lowest possible cost.
Oh, exactly.
Definitely. Yes, and energy that's security the Chinese, is national security.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the Chinese energy policy said. I mean, they had, at the Communist Party conference recently, they talked about the Chinese energy policy, and it was very much security driven. You know, we need to grow, to keep our economy going, to keep maintaining power in the world, we need to have secure, reliable energy. And one of the interesting stats is that China has 55 operable reactors and they've got 22 under construction. Wow. So, I mean, that's a big number. And like, they're going to increase by 50%. So,
yeah, it'll cut down on the number.
Coal power plants as well. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They're all of the above, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Finally, grand finale is here again. So good.
From Exxon Valdez to deep water to Fukushima, every energy source has a risk environmental incident.
Yeah.
Risk of environmental incident. Wait until we're hit with a massive pile of EV batteries and wind turbines. Then what? Well, that's actually a very legitimate comment, because you can't just throw away these solar panels, right? You can't just toss them into the local landfill. Same with the wind turbines. Because of their metal content, some of which is highly toxic to the environment.
Toxic, yeah.
And you're building up these enormous stockpiles. In West Texas, there are enormous surface stockpiles of these retired towers and wind turbines, and now solar panels are being added to them. And you're going to have to find a way to safely dispose of all that waste without polluting the groundwater, which has always been the environmentalist attack on oil and gas. Well, pretty soon they're going to have this same concern about renewable energy and what are we projecting? An exponential growth in renewable energy due to this energy transition. So that's going to become a big, big problem, not just in the United States, but all over the world.
Yeah.
Irene, this is for you, Luca. I will reply here. Remember that Japan is also built.
Is it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they've rededicated to coal too, coal and nuclear.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's Stuart or not. Is a LinkedIn user? Yeah.
Oh, that's Stu. Stu's daily insult about needing more coffee.
We don't need laughing gas.
Yeah. Tammy, great comments on Chinese power.
I wanted to. Yeah, so one of the things in Canada that's an issue is the orphan wells. So when oil wells are drilled on a person's land and they get abandoned for whatever reason, company goes out of business or whatever, they're supposed to be responsible for cleaning it up. And landowners are very upset because there's these wells on their land and, you know, how are you going to get this cleaned up? And sometimes landowners will do it, although it's supposed to be up to the business or the government. So with the wind turbines and the solar farms, what happens when they go out of business? And we're in a similar situation as the orphan wells, where now you have orphan wind farms and solar farms. And now the landowners will be held responsible for cleaning it up. Who's going to clean it up? Are they setting up a cleanup fund the way they have for oil and gas wells in North America?
Texas.
I mean, so... Maybe that's...
Can I add to that? There's another big concern, not so much with solar, but with wind. And that is, you know, those towers are 500, 700 feet tall. They have enormous use of concrete for their pads to site each one of those towers and turbines on. The amount of concrete that's required for these big wind farms is just huge. And it takes up all sorts of land. And the landowners cannot be left responsible for that. But unfortunately, at least unless something's happened this year, there's not a state in the United States that has regulations governing the retirement and disposal of all that. And so it's being left up to these wind developers to self-govern, essentially. And that's not sustainable at all. Because you're going to end up covering millions of acres of land with these big concrete pads that you're going to have to do something with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that should be part of their impact assessment, is that there has to be environment factored into that, just as it supposedly is with oil and gas wells, at least in Canada. I'm not sure what the process is in America.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that AOC is a friend of David, but...
92 trillion.
AOC is making another run at the Green New Deal, in case For those who haven't noticed, last week she was back out really vocally pushing the Green New Deal, which Biden's already pursuing anyway.
Done in the interest.
Yeah, isn't it sort of policy already?
Yeah. In the IRA.
That's a good point. $92 trillion was the estimate in 2019, and we've had an awful lot of inflation since then, so it's sure well over $100 trillion now.
Wait, is that just for the U.S. or for the whole world?
That's just for the U.S. Green New Deal.
Yeah. My God, $92
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting, because who was it? Some consultancy or something estimated the global cost of the transition at $110 trillion? until 2050, so
yeah,
it's
incomparable.
Somebody
numbers.
Overdoing right. something, perhaps.
But the Green New Deal goes further than the energy transition. And the green under the Green New Deal, if you read the document that she published back then,
yeah,
no,
you wouldn't be driving electric vehicles. You wouldn't be driving at all. She's going to build railroad tracks all over the United States that you can't you can't even build one in California, you know, for less than $100 billion,
right.
But she's going to do that all over the United States. We're all going to be, you know, taking rail to the grocery store. I mean, you're not going to be driving at all under the Green New Deal. And, you know, air travel's going to end and you won't be able to take vacations. And, you know,
you'll be living in an apartment pod.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's highly draconian. It's basically Marxism under the guise of environmentalism.
If you could make a conclusion for this attempt. The advantages, I mean, the benefits of nuclear, the risks and the impacts. How can we, each one could please try some words?
Well, with any...
Well, you go first,
yeah, David. Go ahead. No, you go ahead, David.
Well, I mean, the benefits is it's low carbon, it's 24/7 electricity generation, it has a long life, much longer life than any wind farm or solar farm. And the disposal costs are no more hazardous or difficult than it is with solar, frankly. And so, I mean, it's got a lot of benefits. The drawbacks are it's expensive to build. It takes a long time to build, get permitted and build. And, you know, it has a very negative public image that the industry seems incapable of solving.
Yeah. And then Tammy, you
go ahead, Tammy.
Yeah, I agree completely with what David said. The hardest thing is the approvals and having reasonable cost benefit analyses, and that's for any energy out there, right? I mean, when we're looking at wind and solar, all they ever seem to factor in their impact assessment is whatever perceived benefit. They don't talk about the cost. Right. But with oil and gas, it's only the cost and not the benefits. It's like this imbalance in how they're assessing these things. Like with the new social cost of carbon that they were talking about in Canada last week and they talk about globally. But it is a PR issue to some extent, because if there isn't something terrible that happens, it can be quite catastrophic. But that doesn't mean we're not equipped to deal with it. I feel like there's this idea that when bad stuff happens, we run around like chickens with our head cut off, that we can't actually solve the problem. But
right.
this is what people do, is we adapt, we figure out how to solve the problems. And, you know, ultimately, were they saying that German engineering is so bad that there's going to be a meltdown when they shut them down? Really, German engineering is not better than Russian? I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I think environmentalists really, really hate nuclear because it offers the best of both worlds. It offers the reliability and dispatchability of fossil fuel generation and the zero emission count lifetime, from a lifetime perspective, of wind and solar. So it really threatens wind and solar. And that is the biggest problem that the anti-nuclear lobby has with this sort of energy. That and the risk, but David and Tammy already addressed that. So that's the problem with nuclear.
Excellent. Final comments from Stuart. Our podcast available downloads by Spotify and Apple is fantastic. And Thank you, all your listeners.
Excellent. Yes, thank you, listeners and viewers and everybody. Yes.
Thanks.
And Stu.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a great conversation today. Have thank a
always.
Great week.
Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.